Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar led by the Pearls and the Dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up now, because what a football weekend it is going to be. Talk about that in a moment. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory, sales staff that works with you, great service department. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. What a weekend. Starts tonight. Milton and Shikellamy tonight. You'll be able to see it on our YouTube channel this evening, News Radio 1070. 7 o'clock kickoff, 6:30 the airtime. Sealers Grove, Montoursville, SBC channel as well, and Eagle 107, Sealers Grove at Montoursville. Also, the Little Brown Jug game tonight with Mifflinburg at Lewisburg. Other games tonight, Central Mountain, Jersey Shore, Loyal Stock, Warrior Run, Southern Columbia, Danville, Mount Carmel, Shamokin, Halifax, Midwest, Central Columbia, Bloomsburg, James Buchanan, Lime Mountain, Hughesville, Muncie, and Montgomery against Columbia, Montour, Votech. It's all coming up tonight. Bucknell, Colgate tomorrow, 1 o'clock, 100.9 The Valley at Crown Field. Bucknell takes on Colgate tomorrow. By the way, the Little Brown Jug game will be on 100.9 The Valley as well. So we got plenty coming up. And then Penn State football tomorrow night. The Nittany Lions take on Ohio State. 7:30 the kickoff tomorrow. We're on beginning at 6. So we got a lot going on and plenty to cover. Mark Wogenrich coming up next. Then we're going to hear from Neil Coulong. Then it's going to be Dave Redson. Reginald Walker, final half hour. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies and the pickle bar led by the Barrels and the Dills. Indeed, second to none. Stock up for the weekend now. And what a weekend it's going to be. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Check out their great inventory right now. All right, let's turn to Mark Wogenrich, SI.com, Penn State, Ohio State, tomorrow night, 7:30 on, beginning at 6 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Mark, how you been? Great to have you with us.
Doing well, Steve. Thanks. I hate to be the guy on the opposite end of that.
That's right. To be honest with you, I opened the show and I said, geez, Mark, I don't really have a lot of answers. for watching it. I mean, I didn't really know what to say, and I thought that was, on my part, an honest answer. Do you have something to add to it?
I told Matt when he gave me a ring up, he said, how's the reaction been from, like, people you're interacting to? I said, they're still in the denial phase, I think, of this, you know, kind of bridging between denial and anger. The only answer that I really would come up with is... it's how very simple football ultimately is with regard to the quarterback position. If you have a good, strong, healthy quarterback who's fit, effective, and can make plays, you're in really good shape. If you have a second, you know, if you have a backup quarterback you feel comfortable with, who can do most of what your number one guy can do, you feel really good. And it just seems clear that Penn State was not in that position Saturday.
And I think the point I made was, look, football is also the kind of game, no matter what, even if you are a passing team where teams throw more than ever, winning up front also means pass protection. It's not just the running game. But on both lines of scrimmage, you still have to win there. Is that fair, Mark?
Oh, absolutely, most certainly. And it was clear that Penn State really wasn't winning on the offensive line, and their defensive line struggled, albeit against, you know, that that 13 lineman front that Illinois ran really effectively. As many guys as you put on that offensive line, you still have to be able to figure out a way at least to close some gaps and not have safeties and cornerbacks coming down to make a bunch of tackles 7-8 yards behind. Ultimately, this really begs down for me just offensively, because I can go back to the defense. As much as you want to say they gave up 357 rushing yards, which they did.
They gave up 10 points.
Like 300, I think it was 13 plays of maybe 10 plus
yes.
rushing yards. So it was
yes.
big gains, but Illinois got the red zone twice. That I had to go back and look and said, is that really true in regulation? Red zone twice. That astonished me that you could run for that many yards. And one, that's a testament to, again and again and again and again, to what George Stout does in pinning guys back punting-wise. But they kept him out of scoring range as many yards as they put out there. Kept him out of scoring range, delivered the ball to the offense inside the 25-yard line with an opportunity to score. Didn't come away with any points. Three points off three turnovers, kept them out of the end zone in regulation or in overtime to the standard overtime periods. Defense did its job. As much as you build those yards, they did not break. And Penn State's offense broke. To me, that was pretty simple. And I wonder. You know, whether it would have looked like. With another quarterback in there, with a healthy quarterback in there. And that's just like one of the what-if mm-hmm. Questions that you ultimately come around asking after a game like that.
All right. Because they gave up 10 points in the game.
Yeah.
And that ends up being the bottom line. I thought Illinois did a great job in what they did by shortening the game. In other words, 36 and a half minutes, and they mm-hmm. kept Penn State. They reduced Penn State's possessions in the game by how they played it.
Yeah, well, was it something like 11 possessions, 12 possessions, something in regulation?
11.
I mean, just
11.
Didn't get opportunity-wise, that was one of the issues. But I still think that's a game with that style, with the way Illinois is going to play and the way Penn State did ultimately stop them, you need 14 points. I think even going into that game, and I know part of a lot of people on the outside looked at it as like, okay, can you cobble together 14 points with your quarterback situation, not knowing on Friday or last week whether Sean Clifford was going to be starting? You think, okay, with the situation, can you build out 14 points with the quarterbacks you are going to play? And that they didn't trust themselves to be able to do that really. Really is an internal question that they have to go, not that they haven't addressed it, but it's an internal question that they probably struggled with for the past 2 weeks.
It was one of those games where I kept thinking midway through the second quarter that if Penn State could get one more score of any kind, that would be enough. And it turned out that was true. But they never could get that score beyond the middle of the second quarter. And that's it allowed Illinois to start believing they had a chance to win.
Yeah, and I think to me it was the turnover that that did it for me, when they got sacked Arthur Sikowski, got the fumble, got the ball, and I thought, okay, this is that sudden change play that Penn State's gonna turn into something here. They're gonna turn it into some kind of points in this game, and that is going to be, it's going to be ugly, but they're going to squeak this one out because they're just they are better they're a better football team. They didn't play as the better football team. I think ultimately Illinois deserved to win that game as the better football team that day in executing a game plan that they came in with effectively. But that possession to me, I thought that was going to be the one. You get the ball to 25, you're going to be able to do something with this, right? You're going to get a ball to Jahan Dotson somehow. You're going to break something. You're going to hit, they're going to hit a play like they had hit earlier to Keandre Lambert, but they're going to be able to do something. And not being able to do that, that was an alarming moment. And then after that, the cascade of just not being able to really do anything effectively, really just over a two-game stretch. I went back and counted. They've had one touchdown in 23 regulation possessions since Sean Clifford got hurt. They're going to go Ohio State that scored that leads. I think they lead the country in touchdowns. I definitely did the Big Ten. I think they lead the country in touchdowns. That's an alarming task to take on.
Look, personnel wise, you're not going to be able to do. You're not going to be able to come up with a different combination, whatever. It comes down to getting what you do and executing it.
Yeah.
Is that safe to say, in terms of the analysis of the team?
Yeah, I think so. And it's also the pressure that you're putting on the defense to execute almost at a perfect level. I mean, again, I go back to red zone possessions with all that yardage. So, okay, Chase Brown was phenomenal, and Josh McCray was really good in that line, the formation, and everything they did was really good to move the ball downfield on them. But Penn State's defense was, for the most part, effective in keeping them out of the end zone. They got to the end zone once until the two-point conversion part of overtime.
Right.
And you keep asking a defense to be perfect, to execute perfectly when your offense is not executing even at an average level. That's a game and a half now that they've kind of foisted that upon the defense, and they just haven't been able to be perfect. I think they've still been really good the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
The rushing game notwithstanding. Not being quite as physical as they could have been, but still managing a way to get out of those situations without the points. So your offense needs to be just average, I think, in that game to win. And you can't ask that of them at Ohio State.
All right. No, you're going to have to be obviously really good in a game like that. So how do you view, have you really had a chance to look at Ohio State yet? Obviously, offensively, Stroud's played great. Looks like as an offense, they've played great. What's your thought on them?
They're at what? They're challenging, I think they're on a pace to beat the scoring record, that modern kind of Big Ten scoring record that Penn State's 94 offense, that they're averaging 49
right
a game. And you can, I think, four games at 50 plus, and you can discuss competition and what kind of defense they faced. And I don't know, but this is going to be the best Big Ten defense that they're going to have played against so far. But even if Penn State is able to cut that in half, and say, that they put up 25, are you comfortable enough that Penn State can score 26 with the way their offense is functioning right now? I think the defensive matchup with Penn State's secondary is a pretty good matchup.
Yes.
Against Ohio State, and I look at this with a scoring team. With a team that could kind of keep pace and score a little bit, I don't think they're going to stop Penn. I don't think they're going to stop Ohio State, clearly. But I have a hard time seeing them getting to 50, even 40, necessarily, against the Penn State defense playing as well as it has for the most part in keeping teams out of the end zone. I think it's 9 touchdowns that they've allowed this year. I think Georgia is the only team better in the country in allowing touchdowns. So now you've got, you know, having to do that against Ohio State, who could put up numbers in yards, but if they could keep them out of the end zone, you know, half of what they're doing, I think you have a game. It's just, you know, circling back, it's a matter of can your offense even approach scoring in that range, scoring 25 to 30.
What can the threat of a running game mean in a game like this? I'm talking about Penn State's threat of a running game.
I think it's specifically the threat of a quarterback being able to run a little bit. The play that really struck me in that last game with Sean Clifford, he just he was scrambling around a little bit and just and slid 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and he effectively said, it looked like he's trying to avoid getting hit contact as a protective measure. That's understandable. But in that play, when he's able to move and run around and with his head still up and looking downfield, the threat not just to run, but then to throw off that run, off that scramble before he gets to the line of scrimmage, that quarterback draw that he's been effective. You know, it keeps, obviously what Illinois is able to do in those run blitzes that Penn State had, trouble handling. And then it also gives you a chance maybe that you get a play like they had with Keandre Lambert-Smith, where you got a guy checked out of a, Sean checked out of a play, saw the single, saw that coverage, and boom. And you can hit your big plays again. Penn State really has not been able to hit the big plays in a couple of games. They had that, and then the that kind of jump ball that Jahan Dotson brought down, which I really thought, he took an interception away more than anything. That would have been a good play just to knock that ball out of potentially being intercepted, and then he turned it into a great catch too. The quarterback run is so evident, but at least if you had, the threat that they could stretch a running team outside, or break a couple things inside. It's going to free Jahan Dotson. That's probably the biggest thing that I see, that he has not been able to do that the last game and a half, because they, they don't have Sean as a threat to run, and they didn't have really Sean as a threat to kind of get the ball downfield to him either.
Okay, my friend, thank you so much for your time. I hope are you going to be in Columbus?
Will do, yes. I'm looking forward
Look forward to seeing you out there, my friend. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Mark Wagenrich, SI.com. Great to have him with us today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Stock up for the weekend now. What a weekend it's going to be. Back with more from the Sunbury Motors Studio in a moment. Neil Coulong next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports Talk, where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. All right. On this Friday, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for a big football weekend, or maybe you want to watch the World Series between the Astros and the Braves. A big football weekend. We got high school football tonight, college football tomorrow, pros, including Steelers, Browns, which we're going to talk to with Neil Kulong in a moment about. Stock up now at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Maybe you want wine coolers. Make sure you have plenty of water. Soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. The Pickle Bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory. I mean, great pre-owned inventory. Sales staff that works with you. That's why they have so much repeat business. They work with you. And a service department that backs it all up. It's all at Sunbury Motors, the best in the business. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Mike Tomlin says, I'm not going to USC. Neil Kulong, ironically, also says he's not going to USC. Neil, great to have you with us.
Carson he's always fun. I was particularly entertained with the insight he provided the other day, which, to be fair, I don't know if that's him trying to break news. I think he was spreading the same Mike Tomlin as a candidate to USC nonsense that that other people were, but he should probably read the room and know that situation is not something that is going to play well if he proliferates the idea that that's something that's going to happen. I mean, it was just absolutely, it was silly. It was entertaining, and it's gotten even more fun now. So I should thank him.
I mean, because when it came time to answer it, I felt like there was a pinata in the room, and they gave him a bat.
knowing Mike Tomlin, I think he had that one in the holster. He was waiting for it. It's happened a couple times over the years. You might recall he gets linked randomly with colleges.
And sure, right.
You know the college game far better than I do. Just from a media perspective, though, I'm aware that the high-profile schools want to attach certain names with their head coaching openings for probably recruiting reasons, for notoriety, for alumni support. They want to show that they're casting the biggest net that's possible. And if anybody is aware of that kind of nonsense, it's going to be a coach like Mike Tomlin. And coaches that are coming under fire for perhaps not, having a quality track record of hiring minorities, Mike Tomlin's going to be the guy that they're going to throw out there. And the man doesn't want to be used as a prop. I don't blame him at all for that. I think it's absolutely nonsense to think that your job is anywhere close to the level of the job that Mike Tomlin has done and done well for the better part of two decades now. To suggest that he is not even interested, nothing to do with him being interested, to suggest that they think that there's a chance that they could lure Mike Tomlin away to take that job is arrogance at its absolute finest. And personally, I'm glad he said what he said, just because the effort that USC took kind of behind the scenes to prop him up the way that they did, it's embarrassing for him. I don't think a coach should have to deal with that. He shouldn't have to answer questions like that. He's being used for very specific reasons that have nothing to do with Mike Tomlin.
Right, exactly.
And Mike Tomlin shouldn't have to deal with that.
Right. And look, and you're telling me Carson Palmer's on the search committee?
I, for their sake, I hope that he's not.
No.
Okay.
No.
If he is, that's the guy you went right to right away. Huh? The one coach in the NFL that is probably the least likely to leave. Right. You went with Mike Tomlin. You couldn't have brought up anybody else along with Mike Tomlin, which makes it look transparent.
I think Tomlin and Belichick are two.
Really?
Yeah.
Belichick, yeah. Huh?
Well, Belichick will never leave, but Tomlin will. You know, we'd be interested in Tomlin, just not Belichick. It opens up a can of worms and a bunch of questions that USC is going to – they're going to take a hit to their image, which already isn't all that great, by having to answer it now. Now all the people that suggested he was a candidate or heard from a guy who's associated with the athletic department who thinks that he's a candidate, all those people are going to have to answer for that. And they're not going to want to have to do that because I don't think a coach has ever in more emphatic terms shot down the idea that, you know, oddly enough, the coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers would leave months after he signed a 4-year contract extension to go coach at USC on the other side of the country where he has no roots. None of it makes
sense. And has to recruit. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why I always laugh when I hear about pro guys going to the college game. I sit back and go, you've gone from drafting to now recruiting, like trying to convince people to stay. Like, that doesn't happen in the – or convince people to come to your place, and then you got to convince them every year to stay. That's what you want to do?
Doing that over and over again. It's not coaching, as Mike Tomlin would say, it's not coaching ball. He would have – I think he would have major issues with the amount of time that he would get to work on the fundamentals of the game, which is not as – you're restricted at the college level, plain and simple. You get to do more of it at the pro level. The things that they're focusing on are just vastly different. It is a huge a game of recruiting. And Mike Tomlin being legitimately one of the most naturally charismatic people you'll ever meet, if he doesn't coach again, he's going to be in a broadcast booth, probably making the amount of money that he's making now. He'll be great at it. But if people don't know the guy, you don't know. He is 24/7, 365, a coach. That's really where he wants to be, and he's doing it at the top of his profession. He's been doing it for a very long time. He's not interested in resurrecting the program at USC. He's not interested in flying all over to talk to high school kids about coming to his school, and as you pointed out, getting them to stay longer than the 3 years that they're obligated to be there, dealing with the amount of regulation that is involved in that, both past and present, leading into the future. There's nothing there for him on what would have to be on the highest end at USC, the amount of money that he's making today.
Right. All right, so now after the bye week, now, okay, what are the common denominators to the, how about success we've seen going into the bye week?
I think the bye week, it's good to be able to kind of catch your breath and evaluate where you are. It gets you a chance to get ahead of injuries a little bit. Ones that are week to week tend to kind of fall into your favor after a bye week. You have a lot of I don't want to say inactivity, but you don't have to be at practice. You're going to heal a little bit quicker in that kind of environment. You can really rest. So I think the kind of week to week, day to day stuff gets cleared up. So you have a more refreshed team for that first week. Strategically, you get an opportunity to evaluate your entire team before diving into the opponent, which gives you a better perspective of who you are, as well as the time to prepare for your opponent to get to know who they are. Playing a team within your division after a bye week, I've always kind of seen as an advantage. I don't know what the numbers are off the top of my head, but they already know the Cleveland Browns, you know, maybe not as well under Kevin Stefanski, but they have a good sense of who the Browns are, considering how many times they've played them. Three times last year. And, you know, obviously a little bit of a score to settle after that game last season. And it's a good Browns team. So they need all of that preparation. I would imagine they'd come out a little bit sharper, perhaps, than they have recently. But over the course of four games, and this is going to depend on who Cleveland is able to suit up and play. They're pretty decimated by injuries right now. But all things being equal on the two rosters, Cleveland has, I think pretty clearly a superior roster. They have a good coaching staff, and they're able to do things that Pittsburgh is struggling with preventing right now. So I think Cleveland has an edge going into the game. The fact that Pittsburgh has a bit of a bye week helps, but then Cleveland just played on Thursday. So, they've got a mini bye week leading into this game, and they're at home. So I think in many ways a tactical advantage goes away because of the familiarity of the opponent. And Cleveland had, you know, just only like two less days to prepare for Pittsburgh than Pittsburgh would have to prepare for another opponent that happened to play in on Sunday or Monday of Week 7.
What did you think of the Johnson kid on Thursday night?
I think
that was a great story, by the way. Because he comes out of the Alliance and says, "Look, I just want a shot. They give him a shot because everybody's hurt," and he does that.
I saw the letter that he had written asking for, you know, whatever opportunity he can get anywhere else. He'd been in camp with the Saints, I think it was. He looked like an NFL running back. And to be honest, I don't like doing this. I hesitate on it because I don't want to trivialize the effort that he put forward.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But when you have a good offensive line, and even more importantly, a good scheme and well-coached guys, you're going to make guys be in position to make plays. Now, you know, whether he makes a guy miss and takes a four-yard gain and turns it into 11 the way that he did plenty often in that game, that's up to the ability of the player. But you can definitely make a fourth-string running back look pretty good if you have all those things going for it. You and I talked about this. I remember it back in the day. I'm racking my brain trying to remember who it was. But when the Browns hired Kevin Stefanski, what they did 15 minutes after, I'm sure, the ink dried on the contract with Stefanski, they hired an offensive line coach. And that is absolutely what Cleveland needed to do. I said this is going to be the watershed moment that we look back on when Cleveland is good. We're going to say it's because they made a commitment to their protection and within their offensive line to give them a foundation to build on. And not only is it the foundation, that's kind of the only thing they have going for them right now. They're not able to pass the ball particularly well, but they can run it. They can get chunk plays out of the running game, and there's not a whole lot of teams that can do that. So Cleveland has a chance with whoever they have at running back. And that's obviously a pretty significant advantage when you're putting out a journeyman behind, you know, a talent like Nick Chubb, behind a guy like Kareem Hunt. You have the ability to essentially improvise and continue to run your scheme, but with somebody who kind of needs to work his way into it. That's a big weapon. You know, you take a lot. They lost both their tackles. You know, they have other guys that can step up because of the scheme that they're playing in and their ability as coaches to teach that scheme to the backup players who can step in and play at a pretty comparable level.
What do you think of Case Keenum? I mean, look, there are certain guys that I think are good, quote, backup quarterbacks that can hang in there for you for a game or two, and you can win with them for a game or two. Is Case Keenum one of those guys?
Case Keenum looked exactly like Case Keenum looks. You know, that's the thing that I appreciate about him. He was never at a high level, but he was at the level that he's at, and he's always at that level. He's consistent. Doesn't have a strong arm, but he puts the ball where it needs to go. He makes the right decision, and he controls the game well. I mean, at certain levels, not in the fantasy football NFL, at certain levels, though, that's a really valuable player. And I think that's what Keenum is. And he's put together an outstanding career, both before and after his miracle season in Minnesota.
Right.
He's done a great job of being a veteran, reliable quarterback. How many are there? You know, probably not all that many. I get the idea that everyone's going to, you know, jump on the easy bandwagon that, you know, may as well just play him over Mayfield. I mean, physically, there are some things that he simply can't do that Mayfield can.
Right.
And Mayfield needs to do a better job embracing those things and getting them to be positives on the field, which he hasn't done a ton of this season. He hasn't been terrible, but he's not great. We haven't seen him play at a high level, I don't think, often this season. But when you have a guy like that, it becomes a pretty easy decision. If Keenum has a torn labrum, which, to be honest with you, I knowing what I know of that injury, and I have some experience with it, even if it's his back shoulder, even if it's his front shoulder, I mean, he's not going to be able to play with that for very long. It will get hurt again. Keenum's going to play again. I'm surprised Mayfield has not had surgery, and I think a huge part of that is the team kind of saying, all right, well, we don't want to force him because probably he's coming up to us and saying, look, I'll go get surgery now if you guarantee me a contract next year or an extension next season, something like that. They're not sold on him long term. But if he was signed, I'd almost be willing to bet that they'd have him have surgery now. Keenum can keep that team competitive of where they need to be. Mayfield wasn't playing particularly well leading into it. Keenum is, to me, one of the most reliable backup quarterbacks in the league. He can step in, like you said, and play well for a game or two. I think he can go beyond that to a point where I think it's going to have to. Mayfield's not going to be able to play on
that's
that,
right.
For
right.
the rest of the season.
Right, that's exactly right. Did you watch Baltimore-Cincinnati, and if so, what did you think of Burrow?
Oh, what a game that was. That was fun. I really enjoyed that. As somebody that they're secondary teams in my mind. I know them well because I watch them a lot because of the obvious interest of my coverage area. Cincinnati is a really fun team to watch. They're putting a lot of things together. And Burrow, while I thought Burrow had a great game, Burrow's performance paled in comparison quite a bit to the rookie, Ja'Marr Chase, who's offensive rookie of the year, as far as I'm concerned, and their defense. Their defense played lights out in the second half. They get after the passer like nobody's business. Lamar Jackson had nowhere to go with the ball. He was lucky, really, that he got what he got in that game. Made a great throw to Marquise Brown into the end zone. But beyond that, Jackson was a non-factor. They shut him down pretty effectively. And you do those things and then have a quarterback who can complete 70% of his passes for 400 yards and a game-breaking wide receiver, you're not an easy team to beat. And I think Cincinnati is starting to figure that out. At the same time, I don't know if you guys happen to watch it, but you know what I noticed at the end of that game more than anything? I've never seen a Baltimore Ravens team quit on the field with 7 minutes to go. But they gave up. They were not invested in the remainder of that game at all. You don't see them give up a 46-yard rushing touchdown followed by a 21-yard rushing touchdown. They gave up 100 yards on two drives on the ground. That's not Baltimore at all. It was really I'd imagine John Harbaugh was a little discouraged overall with his team's defense. And to some degree, at lots of times, for the season for them, their defense has been pretty light. I didn't expect to see that from them, but they're both really good teams. I don't think Cincinnati is 30 points better than them, but
no.
They're both going to be competitive. I expected Cleveland probably to look more like what Cincinnati has, but if Cleveland puts it together too, you've got the best division in football, and Pittsburgh's at the bottom staring up at that with the bulk of their division schedule to go here in the second half of the season.
What do you think a week like this meant to T.J. Watt?
I would hope he spent a good amount of it in an ice bath.
Yep.
Getting rub downs, ice bath, maybe some light agility work. But he needed to rest up in a big way. The explosion that we saw from Watt in week one has not been apparent. I don't think I got shredded for this in social media. I did not think T.J. Watt played end-to-end a great game against Seattle. He obviously dialed it up in overtime. We saw him make two huge plays on back-to-back drives. I don't think he played a great game overall. Watt is the type, though, that has a way of making a play at some point in every game that he plays, and that's what you remember. That's why he's making the money that he's making. But I think it's still bothering him. I don't think he has that burst that makes Watt who he is. Some rest is definitely going to help that. It's pretty easy for that injury to come back, too. So who knows if he's going to be as explosive as we'd hope that he would be throughout the season. But if he is, it couldn't come at a better time. You're playing a game. I think a lot of them are going to be must wins for the Steelers down the stretch, and they're not going to win a whole lot of them. But they're going to need division wins here if they want to stay competitive within the AFC. And Watt's going to have to be a big part of that against a team that, regardless of who's carrying the ball, is going to need to step up against the run. He's a great run defender.
Well, we're glad you weren't West Coast tempted, because I mean, if Tomlin went, you would have gone with him. So.
I'd follow him anywhere. Easily the best quote that you get from any coach in the NFL.
And you're the best quote
year
we get.
In, year
you're
out,
the best quote we get in this show. Sir, thank you so much.
I learned from the best. That's why. Thanks,
right.
Guys.
Neil Coulong. Oh, what a weekend we have coming up, huh? Plenty of high school football tonight. Milton is Shikellamy on WKOK and the YouTube channel. Sealands Grove at Montoursville, SBC YouTube channel, also on Eagle 107. 100.9 The Valley, the Little Brown Jug game, Mifflinburg, Lewisburg tonight.
Other games tonight, Central Mountain Jersey Shore, Loyal Sock Warrior Run, Southern Columbia Danville, Mount Carmel Shamokin, Halifax Midwest, Central Columbia Bloomsburg, James Buchanan Lime Mountain, Hughesville Muncie, Montgomery against Columbia at Montour Votek tomorrow, Bucknell and Colgate at Crown Field up in New York and Hamilton at 1 with Doug in the suit. And, of course, Penn State football tomorrow night at Ohio State, 7:30 the kick. We're on beginning at 6 o'clock. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Next half hour, we'll talk to Dave Refson here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.